Welcome to the Mind Blown Podcast, where curiosity leads and discoveries follow. I'm Melanie Avalon, biohacker, author, and health influencer. And I'm joined by Scott Immens, entrepreneur, health enthusiast, and seeker of the unknown. Together, we're here to take you on a journey to the very edges of science, technology, philosophy, history, and beyond. Did you know in the minute it takes to introduce this podcast, around 6 million Google searches will be conducted, and at the end of 90 minutes, the space station will have orbited completely around Earth? Did you know when you shuffle a deck of cards, chances are that combination has never been created before? Also, according to Einstein's theory of relativity, time doesn't pass at the same speed for everyone, depending on how fast you're moving. Or how about the idea of quantum superposition? That's that particles can actually be two places at once. So is this actually happening right here, right now? One last fun fact that actually inspired the genesis of this show. If you remember Tinkerbell dotting the I in the Walt Disney logo, that never happened. So on that note, get ready for our adventure on today's Mind Blown Podcast. Hi, friends. Welcome to today's show. Before we jump in, I just want to let you know that Scott and I went on a wild journey today exploring the moon, and there are substantial parts of this episode where we were probably wrong in how we were communicating or trying to understand the, which you will soon hear, trying to understand the tidal lock situation of the moon. But by the end, we kind of get on the right track. So that's just a disclaimer that halfway through for a while, we're kind of just wrong.
But the journey is fun because you're learning along with us and it's going to be fun.
Yes. So enjoy the show. Welcome back, cognitive connoisseurs, synapse surfers, and epiphany enthusiasts to the Mind Blown Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon. I'm here with Scott Immens. Scott, how are you today?
I am fantastic, Melanie. How are you doing?
I'm good. And we were just talking. It actually is very wild that today is a full moon.
Yes. Considering our topic and considering we actually changed recording dates, I just so happened to look up the weather before we recorded, and my little Microsoft app has like the moon cycle, and it's like full moon. I'm like, that's creepy.
I guess there's a 1 in 30 chance?
One in 27.5, I think, to be precise. But still, just like we didn't plan it, and a 1 in 30 chance is pretty slim.
Well, I am very excited. So this is an episode where I'm going in blind.
Well, you know the topic. You're blind for a reason because I want you to be mind blown. And I knew some of this stuff and even I was like, whoa.
I actually have a fun fact. I'm going to see if you talk about it because I came across it while looking for mind blowing facts and it was about the moon. So I'm saving it to see if you bring it up. And if not, I'll throw it in at the end.
Perfect. I always love an extra bonus mind blowing fact.
Yes. Which, speaking of, do you have a mind-blowing fact to start us off with?
I do. I think it was way more mind-blowing when I originally had it, but I'm still going to go with it. Have you heard of this company called Colossus?
I don't think so.
Have you heard of the Direwolf and Woolly Mammoth Project?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I listened to an interview. Actually, I do know that company. Is that the company that brought back the Direwolf?
Yes.
Yeah, I listened to a whole interview on that. It was crazy.
So I went on a deep dive into Colossus and like how they did it. And this kind of goes to like a number of the shows we did. Remember, we've done some shows on like, or I've done some facts and maybe some shows on like the brown tree snake and invasive species. And then the toads in Australia and how they annihilated the ecosystem. And then I'm watching Jurassic Park the other day and I'm like,
oh, the new movie, the new one?
Not the new one. It was like Jurassic World, I think.
There's a new one out, right?
Yeah. They get the Jurassic World domination or something.
Also, really quickly, just to very quickly tangent off of that, I want to go to more movies in theaters. Every time I go, I have a good time and I'm like, why do I not do this more? It's only really when movies, like I'm not even a Jurassic Park fan, but knowing like that's the type of movie you would want to see on the big screen.
Yeah, I think there's certain movies that are going to lend them to like a Star Wars movie. You're going to want to see in the theater if you're a Star Wars fan. Jurassic Park. I think anything with sort of like larger than life scenes and crazy sound effects, you're going to want to see in the theater. But I'm with you. I so rarely go these days. And I think it's partly just sort of my lifestyle, but also you know, when COVID hit, they kind of got out of that habit, you know. Movie theaters today are like a whole new, I went for the first time like a year ago and haven't been back since, but they had reclining seats and elevated seating. So no one's head was in your way. They had a full bar that you could go, they had snacks and food trays. I was like, this is like, it's a completely different experience.
Yeah. So to tangent just a little bit more. So shout out, there's this theater in Atlanta called Sandy Springs Tap House. And it's like that, like reclining chairs, you can have drinks. The chairs actually have like heaters if you want. It's just the best experience. And I didn't realize, I should know this, but we went to see Wicked, which was a while ago, I realized, but there's all these other theaters with different experiences. Like there's the type now where the seats move.
Yeah, like to give you the emotion. I heard there's someone's scents, like smells in there.
And then there's ones with the screens on the side, so it's like all around you.
I don't know if I'd like that, because I used to go to the IMAX and I felt like I was blind.
And there's IMAX too, because IMAX is, I did a deep dive trying to figure out the difference between like IMAX versus the, I think it's called, I don't forgot what it's called. It's just the ones where they actually, for the movie, they film additional footage for this type of screen. So the whole movie doesn't have stuff on the sides, but some of it does. But apparently it's kind of extraneous stuff because it's not even required for the movie, like the stuff on the sides.
Right. But your subconscious is picking up on it, almost like your peripheral vision. Yeah. Kind of cool.
But every time I go to the movies, I'm like, I should do this more often. And then I went by myself like a few months ago and I was like, oh, this is nice. I should do this like every week.
Was the theater packed or not so packed?
It was like half. It was decent. It's a small theater, though.
Yeah, like, I'll just stream it when it gets home. But to your point of all those other things that we've mentioned about the seats, the food, the experience, the vision, being with other people, there's just something about it. But even streaming it now, like it's like $26.99. I'm like, I can get a full movie ticket and a beverage for less than $26 to stream it at home.
And I think this is the thing. So at home, I always will be multitasking. Like I don't want to say never, but I don't see myself ever again sitting down at home and just watching something and not be multitasking.
Yeah, you're not fully immersed in the experience and the subtle facial expressions and, you know, that sort of thing.
So it's like, it's meditative now to go to the movie theater because it forces you to like actually just engage for, you know, 2 hours with the film.
I think being engaged in the whole movie does change the experience. I don't think it's required for every movie, but it definitely enhances it.
That was my tangent. Colossus.
So back to Colossus. So just a couple of things to put this in perspective if you haven't done a deep dive and you want to know more. So Colossus was founded in 2022, but in 2022, the World Health Forum or World Economic Forum put it as one of the top 5 technology companies, and most important technology companies in the world. And so their mission is to help, you know, bring back species that are extinct and then ultimately help bring back species extinct by mankind and then including enhancing those species. And this is where I get a little like, yikes, like where's the line going to stop? And the amount of money that's been invested and the amount of people that have invested in both the company and then donated to their cause. It's a lot of money and a lot of big names. And I'm thinking, what's the end goal here? You know, like, you know, I'm like, I just don't buy that you want to just bring back the dire wolf and like, we're going to stop there. And then it gets into the, oh, and we're going to enhance medicine and enhance, you know, and enhance the creatures. And I'm like, see, that's where we're starting to mess with things. And then just as a side note, I'm watching Skinwalker Ranch last night. Do you know what that is?
Is that, that's scary?
It's not really. It's,
why do I feel scared when I hear that?
Because Skinwalkers evokes a little fear.
But wasn't there like mutilated cows at Skinwalker Ranch? Am I making up things?
No, that is correct. Bigelow Aerospaces and the United States government studied it for 20 years and all kinds of weird documented phenomena occurred on this Skinwalker Ranch. And then this other guy, Bugle from Utah, bought it. He's a multi-billionaire real estate tycoon. He bought it because he wants to get to the bottom of it, put it on the History Channel, and there's been 6 seasons of this Skinwalker Ranch. Well, last year in season 5, they found a dire wolf skeleton on the ranch. And I was like, I didn't think much of it at the time. Like, yeah, it's just, you know, whatever. But now I'm thinking, did they start this experiment a little early and one escaped? I don't know. That's a big stretch, but it just led me to go down this path of, like, we've discussed, like, invasive species and what could happen. And there's a quote from the movie Jurassic Park that came up in the version I saw and the original, which is, life finds a way. And I'm thinking, these suckers are going to figure out a way to get out of this cage. And literally, Melanie, the way they describe the 2,000 acres that these direwolves are on in Texas, like, it's an enhanced zoo-like surrounding fence with enhanced drone technology. So, like, it's like the electrified fences with the dinosaurs, and then they figure out how to get through the electrified fence, and then they figure out how to breed without actually, you know, mating. And I'm like, something's going to go wrong here. Now, that's not to say I don't think it's cool, and I don't think it's interesting as heck. And here's what they did. They took a gray wolf's egg.
Wait, so what is the fact going to be here?
The fact is that they created direwolves. They actually did it.
Scott. I'm like, okay.
That's the fact. But the compounding facts are they are currently working on the dodo.
We should just make this an episode.
The dodo bird, the woolly mammoth, and they had a spinoff company that they're creating fauna that has bioluminescence and can also grow and create structures so you can, like, build things out of food.
I knew all this because I know about this. This is like a thing happening.
I know. But I looked this up a year ago when they were just in the talking phase and the wolves had been born. And then I was like, it's not going to be as mind-blowing now. So that's why I had to give some of the details. But they took a gray wolf. They inseminated the gray wolf with these 14 edited genes. So it's not technically a direwolf. They just use CRISPR to edit these, like, 14 key components. However, that said, these wolves are exhibiting... they're 25% bigger, more aggressive, stronger. They're only 8 months old, so a lot still needs to be learned about them. And I believe they just had their first, I could be wrong because there's a lot of conflicting information, but I believe one of them just gave birth to two pups.
Yes, it did. Because I listened to an entire episode with...
So the fact is they've done it. And my scary hypothesis is they've done it.
Who Beth Shapiro? So I listened recently to an episode with Beth Shapiro on Joe Rogan. I will say, if you listen to that interview, you'll feel a little, well, you might feel a little bit better because at least she seems to just really like the animals. Like, she's like upset, you know?
Everybody loved the dinosaurs. They were so great and amazing. Yeah.
No, she's literally like the woman, and she talks about it in the episode, how she gets compared to Jurassic Park, but she really does feel like, it's been forever since I've seen the original Jurassic Park, but isn't there, like, what's her name plays the woman?
Yeah, if you said her name, I'd know it. She was in the version I just watched. Blonde hair, pointy nose, yeah, it's thin.
She feels like that woman. Like, she just loves these animals, and she's just really excited, you know, it doesn't feel sinister.
I think it's cool as heck, but things go wrong. Animals have a way of escaping. Stuff happens. And at this very small scale, I'm not concerned. But as the scale grows and the population grows and the number of animals they're introducing to different environments grows, I think we're asking for some trouble. Maybe it'll be minor and we can get rid of it.
Well, AI is going to take over before then. So if AI gets the technology, then it's going to create...
It'll create metal dire wolves that'll eat the other dire wolves.
Yeah, that'll be scary. We joke about this, but I'm serious. Something's going to happen.
Well, I told you to watch the Black Mirror episode called Metalhead. I doubt you did.
I can do that, though, because that's one episode. I can commit to that.
It's one episode. It's called Metalhead, and it is about artificial intelligent dogs that have gone rogue.
Yeah, that's scary. I actually don't want to watch that.
Now, this coming from the woman who just did the murdering, the dating show murderer guy. So the dogs scare you, but the murder intrigues you.
I have a fear of robots, like an actual fear.
Oh, that's right. You told me that. Yeah.
Like, the scariest thing to me is, like, the Terminator movies and, like, Bumblebee and the Transformer thing. Those Transformer things are terrifying.
What about iRobot? Did that scare you?
Did I see that? That's Will Smith, right?
Yeah. It's one of my favorites. I just rewatched Signs the other day. Still great.
Yeah. Yeah. So robots.
Yeah. So that's my fact. Woolly mammoth are bringing back. The dire wolves are there. They're 25% bigger. It is real. And They are bringing back, currently they have four animals slated to come back. The dodo, the woolly mammoth, the dire wolf, and some other thing I can't remember.
Not really sure how to rate it because it's just reality that I was aware of.
I know. I'm so mad at I literally had this lined up. I didn't think they'd get out these animals out this fast because they were supposed to be doing the woolly mammoth. So I was kind of waiting, keeping this one in the wings, but then it broke.
I mean, it's very mind blowing in general that we're here, but so is like AI, you know? I think I just disqualify your fact.
Yeah. Okay. I will take the disqualification.
Because I can't rate it because it's like a 10. I mean, it's a life right now is like a 10. Like that's like a 10, but it's not really like a little unknown fact that I can easily rate.
All right. What if the fact was that they are looking to enhance these animals and that their overall arching goal is to not just bring back this species, but to bring back hundreds of species and enhance them.
Isn't that also just fact though? Is that like on their website?
Yeah, but they haven't done that yet. Eh, okay, I give up. Disqualification. I've got a backup fact. I'll look.
No. Now it's my turn. We've already gone.
No, I'm saying if you wanted a backup fact, I have one.
Is it one sentence? I don't trust you.
Go, tell your fact.
Okay. We're going to get a whole nother... I mean, I'm very fascinated. That was really, really intriguing. And I'm sure listeners loved hearing it. It was great. I just disqualified those as a fact, as a short fact that we're starting off with.
Well, I had to really expand that one because it was already out there.
Okay.
And I'm so upset about it. But yes, let's hear your fact.
Which is an example of a short fact. And this is actually long for me, but the clitoris.
Oh, okay.
First described in medical literature as early as 1559. Over the next few centuries, systemically erased from textbooks, dismissed as irrelevant, treated as a medical problem during the Victorian era, it was not until 1998, almost 500 years later, that they actually fully mapped it again, or mapped it for like the medical textbooks. Literally, we knew it was there, and then we pretended it wasn't.
Did we know it was there and have an idea of its function? And then like, oh crap, that's the orgasm button. We got to back out of here.
1559, it was praised as, quote, the seat of female pleasure. So we knew what it was.
And then they were like, we're not touching that for a while. Okay.
Literally, it was in the literature and then literally they took it out.
That doesn't shock me. It is mind blowing.
Like the concept shock. It doesn't shock me because the patriarchy, but, and like religion. The patriarchy and religion, basically.
They were like, whoa, like we can't be talking about the pleasure center of the woman here in the 1500s. I mean, you know, people were getting hung for a lot less than knowing about that. I mean, if you said there was the sun went around the earth, you were like, you know, put to the fire. So I could see why there was a lot of fear around that. But the fact that it went like 500 years before they were like, yeah, we're going to acknowledge that.
And like took it out of the medical textbooks. And then put it back in. And then the fact that it wasn't until 1998 to like actually legitimize it and like make a map of it in the medical textbook. That's 1998.
Okay, that is way more mind-blowing than the 500 years and then taking it out. It's the 1998. I mean, you would have thought by the 70s we would like 60s, for God's sake, at least. I mean, that was the whole sexual revolution. Because of the 1998... I'm going to give that a 7.8 because that's pretty crazy.
Perfect. I accept.
I have a one sentence makeup fact. You want it?
Okay. I'm ready.
Where do you think most of our oxygen comes from on planet Earth? And about what percent?
Where it comes from? It's just there. What do you mean where it comes from?
So plants are, you know, they produce all of our, right?
Are you saying like which plants it comes from?
Well, I'll just say the fact and then we'll go. So 70%, roughly between 60 and 70% of the Earth's oxygen that is produced comes from the oceans via plankton and seaweed and all of the plant life in the oceans. Most people think it's the Amazon and the forests, but really the vast majority, since our planet is about 60 to 70% water, that also happens to be where we get the vast majority of our oxygen from.
So I want to clarify, because I feel like I came off as very stupid saying it's just there. What I meant by that was we're like in like a closed ecosystem. So it's here. You know what I'm saying? That's what I meant by that. Like it's not coming from space.
Right. I didn't know what you meant. But you you've heard the expression like the rainforest, the lungs of the earth. It's really the oceans.
Wow. That's actually, yeah. And what's interesting about that is it's hard to picture because we would think of that stuff as like in the water. So it's weird to think that the oxygen is like rising from the water, you know?
Yeah. Little bubbles of oxygen coming out of the ocean. Plus when the waves crash, that produces a lot of little bubbles.
What did you give me? A 7.8?
7.8.
You can have a 7.8 as well.
All right. All right. You ready for today? Oh, we have our winner.
Yes. Okay. Before we jump in to today's topic, we have this week's winner of my Avalon X Magnesium 8, which I formulated in part with Scott Emmons back in the day, and it is the best magnesium on the market. If you want a full spectrum magnesium, it has 8 different forms, comes in a glass bottle, no problematic fillers, and it will help so many things: your energy, your muscle recovery, your mood, your relaxation, your digestion. It's amazing. And we give away a bottle every week. And all you have to do to enter to win is write a brief or long review of the show, whatever you fancy, on Apple Podcasts, and we pick a winner. So this week's winner is Zinc Lozenges. That's their handle. And the title is Very Cool Podcast. And the review says, definitely worth following, as I think this will become one of my new favorites. Can't wait for all the mind-blowing new topics. So, Zinc Lozenges, thank you so much for your review. Do you ever use Zinc Lozenges, Scott?
I did for a while, but I really got out of the habit.
We're really just supposed to use them when you're getting sick.
Yeah, they're really like if you're flying and you're trying to prevent it. But I have I use my silver gel method now, along with serrapeptase and a variety of other kinases, garlic, oregano, vitamin C, quercetin, and zinc.
Awesome. Well, shout out to serrapeptase, also an Avalon X product. So Zinc Lozenges, thank you so much for your review. Take a screenshot of the review in your Apple Podcast app. Send it to contact@mindblownshow.com, and we will send you a bottle of Avalon X Magnesium 8. Hi, friends. If you've been wanting to try my Avalon X Spirulina or are already obsessed like me and want a portable, travel-friendly version, we now have a mini size available. I am so excited about this. I am obsessed with spirulina because it is one of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. In fact, it is so nutrient-dense that NASA worked with it to help support the nutrition of the astronauts in space. It is a powerhouse. We're talking a complete vegan protein where a serving contains 625% of your daily vitamin B12. Yes, vegan B12. Over 1500% of your daily vitamin A, 100% of your hard-to-get vitamin K, and over half of your daily iron. And it's not just that. It also contains potent longevity compounds, things like glutathione, superoxide dismutase, CoQ10, GLA, and so much more. It's almost shocking how incredible spirulina is for your body. So much of our health and longevity involves meeting our nutrient status, and spirulina can help you do that. It supports energy, immunity, even beauty and detox. It took a long time to develop our spirulina because I was obsessive with getting the purest, highest quality spirulina out there. I searched high and low and found the perfect version of spirulina. It comes from the pristine, clean waters of Hawaii, from an extremely environmentally sustainable production facility, and it is purity tested to the max. Not only is it tested by the facility, we third-party tested it for over 70 pesticides, as well as heavy metals and mold. And the new mini version is so cute, so it's an amazing way to try it if you haven't tried it, or if you want to buy a smaller order, or if you want to travel with it, it's the way to go. It comes in beautiful glass bottles to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And by the way, it tastes amazing. Yes, I tasted so many different ones. You can get spirulina, including the large bag and this new mini size, at avalonx.us. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off. And you can get text updates when you text AvalonX to 877-861-8318. And doing that will get you a one-time 20% off coupon code. You can also get email list updates at avalonx.us/email list. I can't wait for you guys to try this spirulina. Grab the mini version now. Use the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off at avalonx.us. Okie dokie. So I'm ready. The moon. The moon. We did it. We did an episode in the past on the moon, but that was about the moon landing. That was actually a really, really good episode.
Yeah. So if you haven't checked out our moon landing episode, we tried to remain very neutral throughout, but we do have some conclusions and gut feelings based on the facts that we described. So if you haven't listened to the moon landing episode, check it out, because I think you will find it is complementary to this episode in many ways.
So today is anomalies of the moon, right? Or interesting things.
I am coining this one our mysterious moon, but yes, it's really about the mysteries and anomalies of the Earth's moon. It is substantially more complicated than I initially thought and has a lot more anomalies than I could have guessed.
All right.
Okay. So imagine this just for a moment, Melanie. So the first thing to know is that, did you know that there are several cultures, both from ancient times and up to this day, that talk about a time before the moon?
Oh, I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yes. So I'm going to give you some of those cultures to set up the context for, you know, some of these oddities in the moon.
That was not in Christianity, right?
No.
Is the moon in Christianity, in the Bible story, in Genesis?
You know, I don't think it is.
I don't remember it being there.
No, it is. There is a line, the light to control the day and the lesser light to control the night. So there is a line. I don't know where, but there is definitely, it definitely is covered in there. This kind of caught me off guard with the, like, I knew there were some legends that the moon like kind of arrived, but I didn't realize to the extent by which it was. All right. So here are some of the cultures and a very brief explanation. So the Arcadians of ancient Greece, classic authors labeled them the Proslenes, sorry about that, and said that they had lived before the moon's appearance. You have the Tuanku and Aramea peoples of Bolivia, and their Andrian lore speaks of a cataclysmic period when there was no moon, placing its arrival between 11,500 and 13,000 years ago, which I find interesting because that's when we are led to believe that the great cataclysms of the Earth happened and civilization dawned. So that's interesting, right? The Chiba Musica Colombian people still to this day have origin stories that in the earliest times when the moon was not yet in our heavens. The Zulu and other South African groups have legends that describe the moon as a hollow towed into orbit body by two primordial brothers, implying an earlier moonless earth. And then, to answer your question, in early Hebrew traditions, biblical passages, Job 25.5, Psalm 72.5, poetically recall a time before there was a moon, echoing the same theme. Several Roman Greek writers, such as Plutarch, Lucian, Podalus, Censorius, also repeat these Akkadian claims and reference a time before the moon. Scientists estimate the moon age at approximately 4.4 billion years ago. So, you know, take it or to leave it. And also the Navajo Indian tribe of America also has oral tradition and history that suggests there was a time before the moon.
Interesting. What were the tides like back then?
They don't get into it. There's not really anything about the tides, but when the moon did arrive, that's when all these massive tidal waves came.
Oh, I like the towed in one. That's interesting. Sounds like aliens bringing in something.
Well, the towed in one is going to come back in because of what we talked about in episode one. And I do have it listed on in this episode as one of the anomalies of the moon. So let's get into some of these bizarre anomalies. And I have a couple of my favorites. I'll be curious to see which ones yours are. So starting out with the formation paradox, how the moon shouldn't exist. So there's a few leading theories for modern science, and one of them is called the giant impact theory. But its problems have a, it's got a lot of sort of explanatory problems. For example, this giant impact theory, which proposes a Mars-sized body called Theia, collided with the proto-Earth 4.5 billion years ago. However, this theory significantly challenges the moon's existence, seemingly to be impossible. And they go through all of these various complex physics problems that basically say it seems rather unlikely because the moon is formed by debris created from a collision between the Earth. It should contain roughly 70% of the material and 30% of the material on Earth. So 70% from whatever hit the Earth and 30% from the Earth. Instead, the analysis of lunar samples shows that the moon is nearly identical to Earth in its composition of oxygen isotope ratios. This is so striking in similarity, it suggests that the moon formed from the Earth material alone by itself, which contraindicates the impact theory.
I was going to say, sounds like it was from the same Plato.
The impact theory was really big in like the 90s and just sort of like couldn't get traction. Then there's the capture theory, where the moon was basically just kind of flying through the solar system and got caught in Earth's gravity. But that doesn't hold up too well either, because the relative size of the moon compared to the Earth doesn't seem to make that work. Co-formation from the Earth doesn't really work, because then they would be almost the exact same material, and the moon does not have, although it has similar chemical composition, its physical composition is totally different. There's the fission theory that the moon spun off as the Earth was rotating. And then there's the multiple impact theory, saying that a series of smaller things basically shot into the Earth and created the moon. Research from Penn State suggests a binary exchange capture, which may be the most plausible and more plausible than previously thought, explaining the moon's unusual orbit characteristics.
Shows how much I don't know about the moon. I always thought it was just, I guess it would have been the capture theory for me. I always thought it was just out there. I thought moons were just, I don't know what I thought.
So that's just it, Millie. No one really has a good answer. No, like there isn't a clear scientific, like how did our moon specifically, or how do moons, you know, get captured? Most, I think they think that they're captured, but if you look at Titan, for example, it's got a very different composition than Jupiter. So it clearly looks more like captured, and that makes sense because Jupiter's gravity is so heavy. The other thing, though, that I want to stress that we'll talk about again is just how anomalous our moon is. Our moon, in ratio to size to the Earth, is 1/4 the size of the Earth, which makes it the largest moon comparative to its parent planet of all the moons in our solar system and all the known moons.
Oh, I did not know it was... That's mind-blowing to me. I did not know it was that big. I would have gotten that so wrong. Like, if you had asked me how big do I think it is, I would way have missed that.
Well, what then makes it even more bizarre is its mass, however, is 1/80th of the Earth's. What does that tell you? So its geographic size is...
So it's really, really light.
Light for its size, right? And that brings us to the fact that when NASA slammed one of the modules into the moon and it rang like a bell for 6 minutes, back to hollow moon theory. Because if you have this massive moon, right, but it's in terms of its size, but its weight and its density is substantially less, that kind of brings into, and it rang like a bell on top of it, right? So it brings into question, like, is the moon hollow? So this idea that the moon was hollow is not so kind of without merit or unscientific as it might have once thought to have been.
Well, you know what this obviously reminds me of, right? Actually, you probably wouldn't know, but there's going to be somebody listening who might know. Did you ever see the Star Trek episode with the best title ever, "For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky"?
I'm sure I have, but I don't remember it.
Like this civilization unknowingly living inside of what's basically like a hollow moon situation. And one of the guys realizes it because he climbs up and he touches the sky because they're inside of a ball.
Interesting.
Yeah. So maybe there's a little civilization hanging out in there inside that moon. Okay, friends, I have some mind-blowing and scary facts about your skincare and makeup. Did you know that there's essentially no regulation of skincare and makeup in the US, and that most skincare and makeup products are high in endocrine disruptors, which mess with your hormones? These are compounds which are linked to hormonal disruption, thyroid issues, fertility issues, autoimmune conditions, and even cancer. And they are rampant in our skincare and makeup. That's right. When you're putting on that skincare and makeup to supposedly support your skin and help it look better, you actually could be doing damage to your skin and your body and your health. It is a massive problem today. And ladies, if you're thinking of having children, these compounds actually pass through the placenta into the newborn, setting up our children with a toxic burden from birth. And these compounds can last in our system for years and years. In one study, testing conventional lipsticks, for example, most were found to be high in lead. And the half-life of lead is up to 30 years. That means when you put on some conventional lipstick, 30 years later, maybe half of that lead has left your bones. There's also a legal loophole from the 1960s where companies can put whatever they want in products and don't have to tell you what it is. They just put it under the label fragrance. This is why safe skincare and makeup is so important to me, and I am so passionate about a company called Crunchy. Their standards are impeccable. Crunchy products contain no toxic ingredients, which they define as any ingredient known to cause harm or health hazard based on available ingredient data and research. Each ingredient actually undergoes a 30-step screening criteria for safety. All the products are gluten-free, with third-party lab testing comparable to food standards. A ton of their products are non-GMO, just look for the badge on their website, and all of their products are vegan, except for their lip oil, which contains organic beeswax from humanely sourced regenerative beekeeping. All of their products are also Leaping Bunny certified cruelty-free with no animal testing and made in the USA, with the exception of wooden pencils and accessories, which are made in American-owned factories in Germany with extremely high social, ethical, and environmental standards. And they use sustainable and environmentally conscious packaging with no plastic for primary packaging. Their products are also incredible. They make, hands down, the best mascara I have ever tried. Their Golden Light Multi-Peptide Facial Serum will make your skin glow. They also have an incredible daylight facial cream and nightlight facial cream, and an awesome makeup cleansing balm. You can check out their foundation as well, and their incredible sunscreen products. If you want safe sunscreen, you've got to try Crunchy. You can shop with me at crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. That's crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. And new customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off eligible orders. New customers with me will also receive a gift from me after your first purchase. So again, for the ultimate in safe skincare and beauty, go to crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon and use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 for 10% off, as well as a free gift from me. For all the latest discounts, specials, and announcements from me in the world of safe skincare and clean beauty, definitely get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. For all the latest text updates, just text skincare, one word, to 877-861-8318. That's the word skincare to 877-861-8318.
So if the moon was towed into place, you know, that's kind of interesting. So one more.
Maybe it's a spaceship.
Well, that is an actual theory, that it is actually a spaceship, because there have been.
That's where the aliens are.
There have been some bizarre signals that have bounced back from our now dead lunar landers, which is weird, and signals we can't pick up. So that's weird. The other thing about the moon that's also bizarre, we talked about its elliptical orbit, and literally this is what it says in the scientific description. Orbital mechanics defying expectations. So the moon not only has almost a near perfect circular orbit, which is very unusual. Most orbits are elliptical. They get closer and further and closer and further. Our moon has a very, very circular, almost too circular, really. So it's kind of odd. The other bizarre thing is that the moon is currently, and has been, at least to their knowledge, receding away from the Earth at 3.8 centimeters per year. Now, that might not sound like a lot, but you go over a billion years, that starts to become a pretty big distance. They say that this rate is an anomalously high rate compared to the historical average of 1.2 to 2.2 over the past billion years. So it was moving slower, now moving faster, yet it still stays tightly locked with only the one side facing Earth at all times.
Yeah, and I'm embarrassed to say when that came up that I did not realize that it was, I didn't realize we only see one side of the moon. I feel very not smart for not knowing that.
They hear the dark side of the moon and they think that that means the moon doesn't rotate. But that's not the case. The moon does rotate, but literally in such perfect precision with Earth that we never see any other face than the one front side of the moon, which is weird.
Must be a cold place on that other side. Wait, no, it's rotating. Okay, that's what you just said.
That's a good point to bring up. So two things about its rotation. One, that it's locked to the same face, which over billions of years just seems impossible. Like that nothing goes wrong.
It is really cold. Okay.
No, the moon is rotating. So the sun hits both sides. We just never see it.
Oh, I can't do this in my head. Okay. It's always face. Oh.
Yes. They're spinning at the exact same rate. So that's why you never see the dark side of the moon. Not that the dark side of the moon doesn't get hit by sun. You just never see it. See? Weird.
So, but if there's one side, doesn't that mean though, because the side, when we see it, it's lit up by the sun. So doesn't that mean that one part of it is always lit up by the sun?
No, because we don't always see the full moon.
But somebody's seeing it.
No, everyone's seeing the same face of the moon at the same time.
No, because it's not night everywhere. So wherever it's night, that those people are seeing it.
Okay, I shouldn't say same time, but they're seeing the same face of the moon in Australia that we see.
Right, so wouldn't that mean that this face, which is lit up, is always lit up? And if there's a part of it that's always lit up, then there's got to be a part that's never lit up.
No, the reason that I struggled with this for so long, because I kept coming to that same conclusion. But the moon is rotating just at the exact same pace of the Earth.
But how if, I'm going to be stuck here. How if all at every given moment, there's a face of the moon that's the same face that's lit up and somebody sees it. That means a part of the, compared to the Earth, where the Earth enters a period of time like night, where that there's no part of the Earth that's always lit up, but there's a part of the moon that's always lit up. Because we have moon phases, right? Oh my gosh, forgot about moon phases. We're back. Moon phases saving us. Okay.
All right, so I Wikipedia it, so I can give you a, yeah. So here we go. The moon rotates on its axis, but does at the exact same rate as it orbits the Earth. So as it's orbiting the Earth, it's rotating at the same speed that it's orbiting the Earth. So I was saying they're rotating at the same time. That was right. The guy made it a little more confusing than it needed to be. This is called a synchronous rotation or tidal locking. Because of this, the same side of the moon always faces Earth. How does the sun hit the moon? The sun shines on the moon just like it shines on the Earth. As the moon orbits the Earth, different portions of the surface are illuminated by the sun, creating the phases of the moon.
Yeah, I completely forgot about the phases of the moon. I was picturing like a full moon 24/7, which if that was the case, I would have been correct in what I was saying, but forgot about the phases. Okay, I'm back.
But what I find so bizarre, right, is it's drifting away from us at now almost 4 centimeters a year, yet it still stays in this perfect orbit and synchronous rotation. On top of that, the dark side of the moon is made up of almost completely different material, and its gravity is not balanced in a sphere. The moon's gravity has all these different pockets, and it has all these weird anomalous magnetic features on it as well. So based on the fact that the moon is sort of lopsided in its gravity, would make it even less likely to be that perfectly circular and to be that synchronous in its orbit. So I kind of found that really interesting as well.
I thought that was really mind-blowing about a different composition, but then I was thinking about the Earth and how it's kind of different.
That is true, but we're talking about like Well, I'll get into it. I'll get into it.
You're saying like different, like material?
Substantially different densities on the backside versus the front side.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the moon also has these things called local magnetic fields, where the moon has incredibly strong localized magnetic fields on the surface, particularly on the far side of the moon, or the side we never see. These are thought to be ancient global magnetic fields or magnetic anomalies associated with swirls of bright lunar soil, etc. And I have a whole lot more on that. So Apollo 12, we talked about, that was the one that 1 hour after the impact, it kept on ringing. 3 hours after Apollo 13, it kept on ringing. And 6 hours after 14, it kept on ringing. So the moon also has really bizarre seismic activity. So the extended duration of Earth's earthquake, which typically lasts minutes, moon earthquakes can reverberate for hours. Also, they have a uniform propagation of seismic waves traveling uniformly throughout all of the lunar material. So because the Earth has multiple layers, and the Earth has got all these different rocks, soft spots, hard spots, sand, trees, forests, different densities of mantle, etc. When we have seismic events here, depending on what they pass through, oceans, water, mountains, they get interrupted and slowed down. And so there's not this uniformity, but it's complete uniformity propagated across the entire moon.
You know what this kind of feels like? Kind of feels like we're in a simulation and two different designers, like one made the Earth and one made the moon. And the person who made the moon, you know, they liked more, I don't know, they had preferences.
It could be. A lot of the things I've researched in the last few weeks, because I got down this moon thing and went to a whole bunch of other scientific stuff. We're not so far off of the Matrix kind of universe, but I think it's more holographic in nature, but we can do an episode on that. Yeah, it does. And the other thing about the moon is the Earth wobbles on its 23.5 degree axis. So apparently if the moon wasn't there, we'd be wobbling kind of, you know, much more severely. And it wouldn't necessarily lead to instant catastrophic events unless the moon was instantly just vaporized. But if there was no moon, then the events that did happen would be more often and more catastrophic when they did happen.
Okay.
So the moon has no global magnetic field today, although they believe it did at one time. However, it exhibits, again, these strong localized magnetic anomalies that create a complex patchwork of magnetism across its entire surface. So some of these missions that we've recently done have mapped these out, and the strength can be several hundred times that of what they call several hundred nanoteslas. So I'd have to look that up. Maybe you can look that up while I'm going through this, because I'm not sure exactly what a nanotesla is.
I actually was reading about nanoteslas last night. I'm not kidding. I'm serious.
Whole episode is synced up like the moon and the Earth.
I'm reading R. Blank's book he's writing called Empowered, and it's all about EMFs. And the thing that one of the units, he went through like, EF frequency, RF frequency, like all the different ones. And one of them was measured in nanoteslas, and it had like weird symbols like for it.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, you know, these magnetic anomalies can interfere with radio equipment and all types of other, you know, man-made objects. So, and they're pretty darn powerful. They're often in these large impact basins. So, you know, those big craters you see on the moon, those disruptions seem to be more significant in those craters, which just could be because we're getting closer to whatever is underneath the moon. Now, going back to that seismic uniformity, if the moon was hollow and it had some sort of, and it was a spaceship, let's just say, and it had some sort of metal dome underneath there, that would make a whole lot of sense, because if you have a metal or any kind of circular internal core and you hit it, it's going to ring uniformly. So that's kind of interesting. The lunar swirls and magnetism. So these lunar swirls are one of the moon's most interesting phenomena. They are bright patterns on the lunar surface that correlate with the magnetic anomalies, which appear to deflect solar wind particles, creating protected areas, which remain lighter in color, surrounding the regions, and the surrounding regions become darker in color over time. So when you look at the moon, you see those dark patches. Well, the light patches are basically these magnetic swirls that are creating this sort of beauty of it.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of it.
So the closest scientific guess right now is that these are underground magma that is being cooled and creating this ancient magnetic field. Now, you had mentioned this earlier about the sun hitting the moon and the moon being a cold place or a hot place. Well, this is another anomaly about the moon. When the moon is getting hit by the sun, it is up to 250 degrees Fahrenheit. But when the sun goes down, it can get as low as 208 degrees Fahrenheit for a 458 degree swing in temperatures.
Negative 208 degrees?
Negative 208. And the polar regions are typically negative 40 almost permanently. But what's so interesting about that is like, oh, okay, changes temperatures. The only planet or body in our solar system, moon or otherwise, that has more extreme temperature changes is Mercury, which is the closest planet to the sun. So it gets hotter than Venus. And so its temperature swings are hotter than Venus, hotter than any other moon, hotter than any other planet. So outside of its already craziness, it also gets heated up the most and cooled down the most.
I would not like to live there.
Neither would I, which raises questions about our first episode we did on the moon. Like, that's a pretty extreme environment with all these magnetic anomalies, all these massive temperature changes, etc.
Yeah. Every time I get in my, not every time, but often now that it's summer and I'm in my car and I feel the car air conditioning, I think about how a car battery powered that little moon lander for a couple days.
With 1965 solar panels and piano wire on the tires because NASA ran out of money to create a new tire. The other thing that's bizarre about the moon is it has a lot of metals and metallic substrates on the surface and the subsurface. Primarily, it has these titanium-rich areas, which contradict, you know, most of the formation models that we talk about. Titanium is a pretty rare metal on Earth, extremely durable, extremely temperature resistant, and it is unevenly distributed in very concentrated specific areas. So back to some other anomalies, gravitational anomalies. And this one is also really cool. The moon's field of gravity is remarkable, and this is in quotes, lumpy, and it contains large mass concentrations called muscons that significantly affect spacecraft orbits. Now, we didn't know about muscons in 1969. Just saying.
So you're saying if you're chilling and walking on the moon, there's places where there's more gravity than other places?
Yeah, by a factor of 200.
Whoa.
So it can be by a factor of negative 200 to positive 200.
It'd be like in your dream where you're like, you can't walk, you know?
Which, and again, this can affect a spacecraft trajectory by 100 times the expected amounts.
Wow.
Right? Crazy.
Yeah. I want to know how far apart, these shifts, is it how wide are the shifts in the change of gravity?
You mean distance from each other?
Mm-hmm. Is it little pockets, or is it miles where the gravity is different?
The way that I read it, but I'll do a little digging on it. The way that I read it is it's not several miles. It's you'll run into a pocket that might be a mile or 2 miles is kind of how I read it. You got my brain thinking now on this, how far away they are.
Yeah. I'm just trying to visualize, is it you're going through and then boop, just this little moment where there's massive gravitational pull increased and then you're out of it on the other side.
I think it's more than just boop. Because it says it can alter the spacecraft trajectories by 100 times. So it's probably not tens of miles, but it's probably not 50 feet. You know, it's probably thousands of yards to a few miles.
Although it could be small and if it pulls you, you know, really intensely.
That's true. If it's super powerful, which is, yeah, that is true. it could be like a football. I would say it's probably like football size, and I'm just literally guessing because
we have no idea, listeners.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm literally guessing, but I'm pretty good at guessing. I'm just saying, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say football size and bigger.
Yes, but we have no idea. Don't quote us on that.
Yeah, that is not a fact. That is just Scott's theory. The other thing that's really bizarre to me is that the outside of the moon, the top layers, are older than the inside layers.
How does that even work?
Modern archaeology and geology is done by layers. They go down and say, okay, this layer is this century, this layer is this, you know, era. And yet the moon is like seemingly getting younger, as though it's like being dug out from the inside and the inside stuff is being poured onto the top.
How does that work? That makes no sense.
Right.
Do they give an explanation for that? Is there a theory? Because that's up there for.
The only theory they offer is, you know, the moon at one point had active volcanoes, but it doesn't look like that to me.
Oh, so then it's like you said, it's like pushing up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the Earth has active volcanoes, and that's not the case. So I don't know. It seems weird.
And we wouldn't know, though. We wouldn't know what the age is at the, because we don't know what's inside. So how do they, so just from what we've like dug down, that's the way it seems to be.
Yeah.
Or is that what that recent stuff when we were talking about the pyramids and they were using radar to like look down?
And found how they went way further down?
Wasn't that related to like dating of stuff below the surface?
I don't think they've been able to do that with the moon just because of the distance away and the kind of satellites they need. I haven't seen any data on that at all. Now, here we go. The moon has this very like severely striking asymmetry between the near and the far side of the moon. So the near side of the moon, the Mariana coverage, which is what they call the volcanic plains, is 31.2% volcanic plains. The crust thickness is what they call the thinner crust, and it's very thin. And the geological activity is sort of more recent volcanic activity. And by recent, they mean like within the last billion years. So we're putting this into time, like perspective here. The far side of the moon only has 1% volcanic plains. Its crust thickness is 20 kilometers thicker on average, densely covered in craters, and more dense in general. So again, this lopsided, lumpy moon with these complete...
That makes sense, though, because it's going to be hit more, right? Because it's not going to get hit. The side facing us...
No, because it's rotating, remember? It's spinning, just like... Yeah. It's orbiting and rotating, just like us. So there shouldn't be a side that gets hit more often. They go as far as to say it appears as though the moon is actually made out of two distinct separate sides put together. That's how different the two sides of the moon are.
Wait. I gotta wait. Oh, wait. Phases. Moon phases. Okay, I'm back. I keep getting.
You are so stuck on that.
I know. Because what my brain is doing in my head is I'm picturing like seeing the moon the whole time. And so it's always facing us, but I forget.
So yeah, but just as it's orbiting, it's also rotating. So it's rotating and orbit align so that you're always seeing the same phase, same side. Now, yes, you're going to not see the whole moon, to your point, because some of it's not being lit up by the sun. And that's the phases.
Wait, so if that's the case, then the side facing us would have less because it's never facing outward.
Nope. It's always, again, Mel, it's orbiting and rotating at the same time.
I know, but if there's...
Why would the side facing Earth have less or more?
Because there's space between us and the Earth. So it's not like it's getting blasted from behind. Like there's space between.
There's always space between. We just don't see it.
It seems more protected because there's, you know, I feel like there'd be more. I feel like if there's like the Earth and there's the moon.
I see what you're getting at. Like you're saying like the Earth is.
Stuff is coming from outer space. You know, there's not a lot originating between us and that side. Everything will become, I mean, not everything, but the stuff will be coming from beyond. So it's going to hit the side not facing us, right? Because we're not shooting stuff at it.
But that side does face inward. It's just that you don't see it.
I thought you just said that it's tidally locked, so it's always the same side facing us.
No, we see the same side. When it goes into a phase, when it goes into a phase that you don't see the moon, then the other side is facing us. You just can't see it.
Okay.
Like someone doesn't want you to see it.
So when it's like a crescent moon and it's just like a tiny little bit left, that's part of the side that we always see of the full moon. But the dark part is what that we can't see. That is a part we've never seen.
Right. Now, so it's facing us. We can't see it.
We can't. And the dark part, so when it's like a half moon, the dark part, we've never seen that part.
Correct.
And that part is when it's a full moon, that dark part is on the backside.
And by we, I mean human beings standing from Earth. We've had satellites that have gone around the moon and seen the backside of the moon.
Important question. So I make sure I'm following. So
honestly, of all the crazy facts and things about the moon, I did not think we would get this was going to be this is going to be so deep. But go, I'm loving it. Go ahead.
So when it's a half moon, we see half lit up, half dark. That dark part is not the part we see when it's a full moon. When it's a full moon, we see the half that we saw, and now we see the other half that currently during the half moon is on the other side.
That is my understanding. Yes.
Okay. So basically, we're always seeing a portion of this one part of it, a portion of this one part up to the full amount.
That's exactly how to explain it. Tonight, we're going to see the full moon because it's a full moon tonight on this episode. By the way, coincidence. And that's all we ever see. So when you see the sliver, you're still seeing the same exact part of the moon. Just imagine you put a piece of paper over it that's in a circular form and boom.
So that means that even though the dark side of the moon is very different from the light side, the dark side of the moon is equally sometimes facing us.
Exposed, yes.
Facing us sometimes.
Yes. Equally exposed facing us. Yes.
So it's kind of like they made a moon and we got a flashlight on the part we want to see, and that all looks like something. And then everything else looks a little different because it's backstage.
Yeah. It's the back of the spaceship. It's where all the beings are hiding.
So it's like, only look at this part. Only look at this part. I'm like, you can't see me when I'm twisting my body. It's like
it is. I think to me that was the thing that got me so interested in this topic and in the moon in general years and years and years ago. Was I'm like, wait, because I went through the same thing you're going through. I'm like, wait a second. So you're telling me that the moon is rotating? Yeah, and it's orbiting. Yeah, then how come we never see any of the other? Like it was so hard to get over that. But then, like, and I still am not sure I buy that. But that's. The scientific explanation is that it is rotating and orbiting at a pace that keeps that same side facing us. And then the cycles of them or the phases of the moon is when the moon is sort of doing its thing and spinning, but you can't see it, which just seems bizarro.
It just feels like such a like circus act to like keep that so perfectly going so that we only see one side.
So perfectly going for so many millions of years, right? Or billions, right? While it's receding away from the Earth. So if it's receding away from the Earth and the Earth is wobbling and we're both going around the sun at, you know, 17,000 miles an hour or whatever it is, it just seems to me that if the moon is retracting from the Earth and, quote, accelerating from this, you know, getting further away, something's got to give, but yet it's still, we never see any of the moon. It still stays locked. Like,
oh, I got an update. There's a phenomenon called libration. Is that on your list? So we actually see 59% because there's a slight wobble. So occasionally we peek around the edges.
What? So occasionally, how much do we see?
So we can actually see about 59% of the moon's surface over time, not just 50%.
Oh, we get an extra 9% because of the wobble?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
This really, though, I already said it, but this really feels like that's weird, that we only see one part and that it's different, on the other part, even though it's all rotating. Because it makes it, I was thinking that like...
And also, no matter where you are on the Earth, you see the same part of the moon, which seems odd.
Yeah. Well, because I was thinking when you first mentioned the tidally locked, I was thinking that it's this one side of the moon that's locked to the Earth, and we always see that one side, which that makes sense that it's different on the other side because, like I said, there's nothing coming between. I mean, I don't know, but there's not stuff coming between the two, like the Earth and the moon. But if it's rotating, so everything is actually always at different points, then that doesn't make any sense why only the side that we see looks so different. That doesn't make sense.
So when I first like dug into this, like I said, many years ago, I just assumed, like I think you maybe assumed that the moon was like tightly locked, and the dark side of the moon meant that side never gets sunlight, and it always faces us, and it's locked in that position. That's what I thought. And when it was my dad actually that said, no, the moon rotates. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. He's like, yeah, it does. Well, this was like pre-internet days. So I started digging into it. I'm like, holy crap, the moon does rotate. I've been like, you know, thinking about this for probably 25 years. It's like, because I really thought the moon was tightly locked, just like you did, and that we always saw the same face because it didn't rotate. But it does rotate. And I will bet you anyone listening to this episode, I'm going to say half think the tightly locked and dark side of the moon meant that it didn't rotate. Because it's really called the far side of the moon because it does get exposed to sunlight.
Are we sure we're saying this right?
Yes, the far side. So if you call it the dark side, that's technically incorrect because it does get exposed to the sun. It's the far side of the moon that we don't see, and it is rotating. 100% positive.
Okay. Wait, I think we explained it wrong because I just asked chat, does the far side ever face us? And it said no. And when I was using my half moon example, I was saying that half of it was the far side.
And I was saying that that when it's in the phases that it's facing us. So let me work with you.
I'm saying when it's a half moon, is the dark part the far side? No. Okay, so that changes everything. Now I have to redo everything I was thinking. Half moon, half of the near side, half in shadow. New moon, near side is dark, far side is fully lit. Full moon, near side is fully lit, far side is dark. Okay, so then that is right. That does make sense then that. Oh my goodness. That does make sense that they're different compositions because the same side is always facing us.
Oh, yes. So you're saying even in the phases, when it's a new moon, the moon is essentially blocking the sunlight, but it's the dark side getting hit by the sun and the same face is still facing us. That, yes.
Yeah, that's what I was saying right at the beginning.
I messed up on the phases. I thought the phases was when it was facing us, but it's not. You're correct. But that still doesn't explain it because if the moon is between the sun and the earth, right? And that's the new moon phase, right? Check that out.
Yes.
Right. So that means that that supports your theory because the more exposed side, meaning that there's no earth to protect the moon from anything coming from the sun or anything coming from outer space could get hit more easily.
Thrilling announcement, friends. My EMF blocking product line is finally here, and I'm going to tell you how you can get 10% off. Did you know that EMFs are considered a type 2B carcinogen by the IARC? They are linked to so many health issues, including headaches, migraines, fatigue, and even potential fertility issues. Thankfully, there are a lot of ways to reduce your exposure, and one of the best ways is to not use Bluetooth AirPods. And also, do not put your phone by your head. In fact, did you know that if you look in your iPhone, go to the legal section, and then RF exposure, Apple literally suggests that you use hands-free options like speakerphone, headphones, or other similar accessories to reduce your exposure to EMFs. Yes, it says this in your iPhone. And here's the other thing. Even wired headphones, being digital, can conduct EMFs into your head. That's why I made Avalon X EMF-free air tubes. They're basically like your normal wired headphones, but they turn into analog closer to your ear, so it stops transmission of EMFs into your head. I'm launching with black ones and rose gold. You can use adapters to make them fit any phone. And the reason this launch took so long, we're talking actually years, is because I was so neurotic on getting good sound quality. I cannot even tell you how many different prototypes I tried, but we finally have them, and you can get them now. Go to avalonxemf.us and use the code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off. That's avalonxemf.us with the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off. That link will actually redirect to my partner's website at Shield Your Body, and that coupon code MelanieAvalon will get you 10% off site-wide for all of their EMF blocking products, including my air tubes. avalonxemf.us with the coupon code MelanieAvalon for 10% off. Yeah, so basically, so my very, very beginning question still stands, that there's not a side that's, it's not like there's a side that never gets sunlight. They all, both sides get sunlight. That's what the phase has cleared up for me. But the second, so that we were tracking there, the second part though, where we're talking about the different composition of the two sides, that does make sense, because even though both sides get sunlight or, and get night, there's one side that is never faced outward. So that makes sense that it looks different. I would look different if I only faced.
Well, it's still getting hit by the sun. But I think your theory was that if the Earth is between the moon and the Earth is like that side of the moon is always facing the Earth, you're saying the Earth is sort of acting as a protectant or a buffer. I think that makes sense.
If you're always facing this one body, it makes sense that the back of you looks completely different than the front.
But the back does get an equal amount of sunlight.
Yeah, yeah. So equal light, which again goes back to my epiphany earlier. But
you'd think that then it would have Venus, Mercury, and the sun protecting it. So
no,
because the sun's gravity is much more powerful than the Earth's gravity.
Hello, it's really close to us. And it's only facing us. It's not locked to anything else. It totally makes sense. It's close to us. It's locked to us. This one side of it is facing us. So I take back my thing about like it's constructed because we only want you to see this. I mean, that could still make sense, but it does make sense that there are more craters on the dark side. That tracks.
I can't take away from the fact that that is a valid hypothesis. And kudos to you for catching that.
That was a journey.
That was a journey. I hope we do. We still have you guys there.
I feel better now because I am picturing it. I feel good. I think about my understanding of it.
I'm just checking your theory out.
I like what chat says at the end. The moon's always there, just sometimes it hides in plain sight. So the dark part that we see is the same part we would see when it's full. It's just hidden in plain sight.
Okay, according to Proximity AI, I put in your theory. Far side versus the near side crater facts. Observation. The far side of the moon we never see from Earth is indeed more heavily cratered as it has fewer volcanic plains. The near side facing the Earth has large marinara and fewer craters. Intuitive hypothesis. You might expect that the Earth, being a large planet, would shield the near side of the moon from incoming...
It's going to say I'm wrong.
I don't know. I'm reading it with you. I'm reading it. It does seem like it's leading up to say.
It's being gentle. It's like, oh, you would think that.
Intuitive hypothesis, which you intuited well. You might expect the Earth, being a large planet, would shield the near side of the moon from incoming asteroids, comets, resulting in fewer craters on the near side. The reality, you're right. It's leading up to a gentle letdown. The Earth is much smaller than the area of space that the moon sweeps through its orbit, so it only blocks a tiny fraction of potential impacts, about one in 13 millionth of the sky seen from the moon. Conclusion, the Earth shielding effect is negligible to non-existent. The primary reason the geological... not impact, is that the near side is thinner and has more volcanic activity and history. This allowed the lava to flow and covered up many old craters, forming the marinara and making the surface appear smoother.
And that has anything to do with the fact that it's tidally locked, or that's just chance?
I'm going to get there. Let's see. The far side crust is thicker, so there has been volcanic resurfacing and ancient craters remain visible. Both sides of the moon receive roughly the same number of impacts over time.
Ask, does the different material, like the volcanicness stuff, does that have anything to do with being tidally locked, or is that just, surprise, the part we see?
All right, here's what I'm asking. Does the extra volcanic activity relate to being tidally?
This is going to answer for me whether or not I think it's somebody putting on a show and only lighting up one part.
In synchronous orbit with Earth. Excellent question. Wonderful question, Scott. It likes to make you feel good.
You get the credit.
Want me to put Melanie in?
No, it's okay. I know it's the woman behind you.
Yes. Gotta have a good woman behind you. Tidal locking in synchronous orbit. Tidal locking means the moon rotates on its axis the same rate it orbits Earth, so the same side is always facing us. This happened, blah, blah, blah. Could tidal locking affect the volcanic activity? Tidal forces can cause internal friction and heating on the satellite, blah, 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 on the moon. Tidal heating from the Earth is likely much stronger when the moon was closer, but it is inconclusive that it could drive enough widespread volcanism to create this difference. The current understanding is the lunar volcanoism is believed to be due to internal heat left over from the formation of radioactive decay, not ongoing tidal heaving.
Okay, so I am sticking by my theory, because that is so random that it all is on one side that we see, and it doesn't have to do with the fact that it's locked to us.
Yes, it's saying it doesn't have to do with the Earth.
Putting on a show.
It's putting on a show. The asymmetric crust thickness. The near side is thinner, thus allows more magma to break through. Why is the crust thinner? One theory is that the Earth's history, the tidal forces, may have kept the near side warmer, preventing the crust from thickening.
Now it is supporting the tidal.
Another theory is the distribution of radioactivity elements like creep, potassium, and rare earth elements such as phosphorus concentrated on the rear side, providing extra internal heat. Once tidal locked, the moon's orientation to the Earth was fixed, Earth's gravity and heat could have had an influence in the early time maintaining a thinner crust, possibly contributing to more back. So you're not wrong and you're not right. It's really, they don't know. This is the thing about this whole space thing, is there's like, no one really knows crap. They have a lot of theories, but I mean, nothing definitive. The conclusion, there is potentially a tidal effect on the Earth, on the early moon's tidal forces, which could have created a thinner crust, making it more prone. So you were right in the, not so much with the slamming of the things, but it did seem to have, according to modern theories, which are, you know, And then it says, however, the exact same mechanisms are still being studied, and it's likely a combination of tidal, thermal, and compository factors. And the main theory is creep, which is the radioactive theory.
Yeah. So here's the thing. If it doesn't have anything to do with being tidally locked, then that's wild odds. Like, that's like, what are the chances that it picked this one side to be different?
Well, what are the odds that it spins and rotates at that exact same speed, at that exact same rotation for millions of years? Just that alone is crazy. But I think your theory in the early moon has legs. But your theory that maybe the tidal locking created a warmer side to the moon. So I think that does make sense. And if I had to go with a theory other than the fact that I think it's artificial, and by that I'm, you know, half kidding, because like I'm not really sure, but it's so bizarre that it could be.
I almost feel like it has, the tidal locking has to be, if not all of it, the majority of it, unless you want there just to be crazy odds. Because those are crazy odds that it just randomly does different things on one side that we happen to see. Unless it's the show theory and somebody they're putting on a show, which that makes sense too.
When we figured out the phases and the fact that it's the same face facing the Earth, and you mentioned, I was like, I think that's got some legs. That's why I wanted to look it up, because I think that's got legs.
And I think I answered your question. You at the beginning, you asked me what I'm going to be most fascinated by, and I think that's very obvious now.
Is the tidal locking?
Is it tidal locking that's determining why this side that we see is so different, or is it something else? I mean, if it's something else, then why? Because that's big chances that happens.
If it is something else, which, again, it could be, considering all the different theories that there are on why. And the fact that it's all radioactive also is kind of interesting to me, or hyper radioactive is interesting to me. To me, the most fascinating thing about the moon is the whole tidal lock situation, period.
Yeah. Because if you think about it, you can remember the way we're taught it in, you know, elementary school, and they like have the basketball and they have like a baseball and they like, or an orange, I don't remember, but there were two balls involved. And then they like move the ball around the bigger ball and show you that the same side is facing it the whole time. So that's cool and crazy and mind blowing, like you said. But then, on top of that, the fact that stuff inside of the ball is randomly like pushing out and creating a different face in the face that faces the Earth. Like, why? Like, why is it so energetically like putting out something different on that one side that faces us? That seems intentional.
And no other moon is as tidally locked as our moon. There are moons that are pretty tidally locked or really close, but nothing is as like spot on as our moon. So that's another odd. Most moons, you see the whole moon from the planet. So that's also another bizarre anomaly. I mean, it just filled with like it's one anomaly after another anomomaly after another. It's just crazy. So there are these other things called TLPs, or transient lunar phenomenon, which are mysterious lights and charges that occur on the moon. TLPs for short. They last for seconds to hours. They have glows, hazes, color changes, temporary obscurations, like blockages of vision. They're located specifically mostly around the craters at what's called Aristarchus. And some of the theories from research suggests, right, they never know anything. It's always like, we think, maybe. It's the release of trapped gases inside the lunar interior, micrometeorite strikes, electrostatic effects, which does happen when the sun hits the moon. The dust actually becomes charged, and they said that could be very dangerous for astronauts in suits, which is interesting. Also, it could also be caused by solar activity and solar wind variations. Now, this is the second most, I'm going to get to the second most incredible thing. So the last thing on the tidal influences, the moon's gravitational extends beyond the ocean tides. It actually can slow or the rotation can slow the Earth's day and extending the time of light on Earth, which seems bizarre, meaning like the moon is slowly making the Earth spin less fast. So it could go, they're saying in a billion years time, it could go from 24 hours to an 8-day hour. And then the orbital recession of the moon, which was originally only 14,000 miles away, is now 285,000 miles away due to the 3.5 centimeter, you know, drift. So when it was only 14,000 miles away, what kind of impact did that have on the Earth? Because that is more than, that's 15 times closer. Would have looked huge in the sky.
Wow. Yeah. I want to know, speaking of huge in the sky, are you going to talk about when it, like harvest moons and stuff?
I didn't do a lot on that, but I did do some other interesting stuff. So we've also discovered that there is substantial amounts of water on the moon in the form of ice, and it's confined in these permanently shadowed regions of the moon, which are deep in like these giant sort of 300 feet craters that just never get exposed to the moon. So the extent of water on the moon is much more than we initially thought, billions of tons potentially. There are also some new minerals that were discovered on the moon, helium-3 crystals, for example, which have the potential for unlimited fusion energy, sulfur deposit, which were unexpected at the South Pole, and glass spheres, this mysterious translucent spheres of glass on the far side of the moon. I mentioned this earlier, radio signals and unusual emissions detected at the Apollo landing sites. Kind of strange. Various potentially artificially looking structures and atmospheric phenomenon, such as horizon glows and streamers. Now, this last part, I think, is the most mind-blowing to me, which is that the moon gives off an electric charge to the Earth. Did you know that?
I'm trying to think if it was, it might have been in the book I'm reading right now.
So what's so interesting to me about that, 3 days before the moon is full, the electric spike peaks by about 3 times its normal. At the full moon, it drops back to near normal, although it's still spiked. It's not nearly as spiked as it was. And then 3 days after the full moon, it spikes to its highest electrical output 3 days post the moon. This is the best hypothesis for the effect that the full moon has on biological life, including the full moon phenomenon and the female cycle. And thousands of different species of animals have specific mating times based on the moon's phase. So is it just the phase of the moon, or is it the electrical charge that it is giving off?
Yeah, to that point, because I've interviewed, I'm trying to remember who talked about this specifically. I've done interviews on my other, on the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast about like living according to your cycle syncing, basically. Well, I think it was Elisa Vitti maybe. And she was talking, somebody I interviewed was talking about how like when a woman stops cycling, you could still in theory, like live according energetically to the cycles of the moon, if you want to like keep up that same pattern, or if you don't have a cycle.
Which, you know, if you're taking birth control, kind of throws that whole thing off rhythm.
Yeah. We should do an episode on birth control.
All right. Did I hit the fact that you wanted to bring up?
No.
Oh, okay. What is it?
Do you know what they think the moon smells like, or what it does smell like, according to astronauts?
Chestnuts.
Oh, do you know what space is supposed to smell like?
I have no idea.
I'm going to save that one for one of my mind-blowing facts, but the moon apparently smells like gunpowder.
Hmm.
I wonder if it smells like, remember we did the toy episode and we were talking about the where we could really smell that smell from the cap guns. I wonder if it smells like that.
Well, it's got a lot of sulfur on it, so that could be it.
Yeah.
I did not know that fact. So what's the most, other than the tidally locked thing, like what else, like really kind of...
I'm really, really distracted by this tidally locked situation because it's like...
Let's take that situation and hypothesize into it. Like, so like, what do you think that, like, do you think that's just sort of chance, or do you think that that's designed by a creator, a matrix, or do you think that there's something to this lore in oral history that, that maybe there was a time 12,000 years ago before the moon?
It all hinges for me on how much this tidally locked situation can affect that side. It's all, that's what it comes down to for me. Because if that can do it, I can accept the tidal lock concept as something that just happens, like because of, I don't know, gravity and...
But no other moon does that. No other moon is as large.
But you said other planets are sort of tidally locked, right? Tidal locking is extremely common in the universe, especially with moons. Most of the large moons in our solar system are tidally locked to the planets, just like our moon is to Earth. Jupiter's moon, the Galilean moons, they're all tidally locked to Jupiter. Oh, so three of them are all tidally locked to Jupiter. Saturn's moons, Titan is tidally locked to Saturn. So are 5 other ones.
Well, tidally locked and seeing only the same side might not be the same thing, though.
It's got to be, right? If not, then we're going to have to revisit that entire conversation. Wait, is the tidal? I mean, I don't want to make, we'll see, we'll find out. Yes, tidal locking is what causes us to see the same side.
Yeah, it says 60 moons besides our own have that.
So it seems like this is just something that happened. So that's not actually that surprising to me. What's surprising is that the side we see looks different. That's what's weird. So that's why I need to know if tidal locking can cause the side to look different, or if it just happens based on stuff internal. If it's just stuff internal, that's weird. To me, that says something wants that to appear only on one side. Like it literally feels like a production, like a show, like you're seeing the stage. But if tidal locking can cause it, then that makes sense.
So I'm going to for the next episode, I'm going to look up these other moons and see if they have weird other sides to them.
Yes.
See if your hypothesis holds up. I think if that were the case, though, wouldn't they have, like, well, all the other ones do this, so this is why. Like, they should have an answer to that. For me, I think what really freaked me out was the electric radiation the moon gives off during its different cycles, and that it peaks 3 days before and 3 days after the full moon. That's kind of crazy.
I will comment on that. I will say really quickly, apparently this happens with other moons. So I think that this tidal locking thing is a thing that happens, and depending on what went on back in the day, maybe sometimes it creates a really different side that we face. So I am retracting my performance theory.
What do you mean that it's just basically a result of being tidally locked, thinning out the crust, creating different sides.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. Rather than it being like a production and we're only going to show them this one side. I mean, nothing would surprise me. That could be the case as well. But if it was just the moon that was tidally locked and just the moon that had a side that looked different, then I would literally be like, this feels like a spaceship or something. But it's happening all over. And so doesn't take away from all the interesting anomalies, though.
I keep, all right, I'm going to let it go. I'm moving on with my life in this moon.
Well, thank you. That was really epic. I learned so much. I'm never going to look at the moon the same way. Oh, I have a little, okay, this is a mind-blowing fact, I think, about the moon to end with, if you like. I to this day, don't believe this. I should probably fact check it. Do you remember, and I might have told you before, you remember like Marilyn Bassavant?
Are you pronouncing that name?
Marilyn Bassavant, the smart, like she was like the one with the highest IQ, and she had a column in Parade magazine.
If I need a fact about her,
she just had like the highest IQ, or has the highest IQ, and she had a column in Parade. And so she would answer questions, and they were just like questions that you want the person with the highest IQ to answer type thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So somebody asked once, and they said, when you look at the moon, okay, you know, sometimes the moon, like it's like a half moon, let's say, or a crescent moon even, and you can see, like it looks, you can still see the full circle, but you see like the lit up crescent, and then you see like a darker, you like see the dark part, right?
Yes.
She said you don't. She said that's your mind filling it in. Let me ask, and you know what? I'm glad we're having this moment right now, because I have not believed that since middle school.
Clearly can see like a dark outline.
Okay, she was wrong. I feel so much better, Scott. This has bothered me since middle school.
Our combined IQ is just as good as hers.
Yes.
No, I knew I was not hallucinating. I've been staring at that since I was five.
You actually are seeing the darker side. The gentle glow is called Earthshine. What a beautiful word. Let's create a product brand. My next product brand, Earthshine.
That's really good.
Is sunlight reflected off of Earth that bounces back to the moon and dimly lights up the dark side. Okay, Marilyn Bassavant, you were wrong. That has bothered me since middle school, because literally every time I see it.
Unless she's right and it's a giant cover-up yet again.
Yeah, this is true.
Because if you back to our episode we had talked about earlier, Melanie and I really struggled with, like, why did we just stop going to the moon? It would seem like the ultimate strategic advantage, and it makes no sense to have stopped going to the moon. And that no other country on Earth has been able to make it to the moon.
Makes no sense that we can't go now. That's what makes no sense. It's the only thing we can't, well, pyramids, but it's like the only thing we can't do that we could do then. Like everything else has gotten way better that we could do back then.
Everything about rocketry and computers and AI should, like the efficiency of rockets, all of it should like enable us to get to the moon more easily.
Yeah, and we can't.
which is, and you know what, in that episode, what blew me away was, remember we talked about that the Gemini had gone 800 miles into space, and then they were like, oh, now we're going to go 280,000 miles each way. Like, so you, wait, you went from 800 miles was your furthest ever trip, and then just one day we're able to go 285,000 miles? Like, it just, that was the part for me that was like, that's hard to swallow.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. And then it's also mind-blowing how, like, really upset people get when you...
Oh, I know. They get very upset.
And what's interesting about it, because I don't think I'm very, like, conspiratorial. Like, I feel like I just try to be open-minded about things and as objective as possible. I think if you just objectively look at the facts, there's nothing... It's not like you're saying the world is flat. It's not like you're saying the moon is made of cheese. It literally just makes sense that we didn't go. like fact wise, it makes sense, but people get so upset.
Well, I mean, I was so into space and the moon, I never wanted to believe that we hadn't gone, and I'm still not certain, but there's so many weird hinky things that it does make me question it. And I don't think you should be prohibited from asking questions. I mean, so many scientific theories that were once considered fringe because people asked the question, how dare you ask the Earth goes around the sun? Or how dare you suggest germs cause disease versus, what I forget what the other guy's theory was, but the germ theory guy, they ran him out of science. Like he died in a mental institution because they made him feel so crappy, right? So like science is very slow to want to take.
Or how dare you say there's a clitoris?
Right, 500 years. But no, you're just imagining that thing. You have one of those? That's it. That's an anomaly, right? You know, I mean, science is very slow to want to move.
Especially when it's driven by agendas, like with the clitoris thing, you know?
Yeah, that, which is a big one. And even like with Graham Hancock, I've been watching his specials. And I know we've talked about doing stuff on that. Like there is a reason that they are protecting this narrative. And you can go back just as far as the 90s. And they were like, humans weren't alive 100,000 years ago, max. Then 2000s. It was, or now it's 200,000 years. Then it was, now we think it's 300,000 years. But there are multiple pieces of evidence that suggest it's in the millions of years, but they bury the evidence because the scientists that publish the data either get run out or they get too scared. So they say, oh, this was found in a million year old area, but we know it's not really a million years old. Like, what?
We're like so wedded to these ideas.
But just like I said, just 25 years ago, it was 100,000 years and we're already up to 300,000 years. So why couldn't the pyramids be 30,000 years old or older, right? I think the likelihood of a society having been here is just as likely as it not. And the fact that people don't want to explore the question and really examine the evidence, they just want to name call and, oh, he's a this or he's a wacko, he's not really. Well, then explain it to me. Like, tell me what your evidence is instead of just doing ad hominem attacks against this person who's...
Like, explain why it's a wacko to think the other way, you know?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I have to ask these questions about the moon landing because they're really weird. And the moon itself is really weird.
Yep. Well, this was great. That was a great journey, no pun intended. Thank you so much, Scott, for prepping that. When I was little, I did think the moon was made of cheese.
Oh, didn't we all for a while?
I don't know why. Why do we tell kids that?
I think because so my guess is that the moon had like what seemed to be holes in it, and cheese back in the day, the Swiss cheese had like those holes in it. So they were big round blocks of cheese. So that's what I'm.
Yeah, I know that's why, because it looks like cheese. But why do we tell kids that? Like, why was I told that?
Because in the 70s and 80s, they were like, it's made up of moon dust. Like, they didn't. What are they going to tell you? You think your parents knew what the moon was made of? We don't even know what the moon is made out of.
Yeah, I don't know. If I had a kid, I would not tell them like fake. Maybe. Maybe, it was in a lot of cartoons too. Oh, maybe that was it.
There was a very famous movie in like the 30s where a rocket goes to the moon and it was made out of cheese.
Yeah, I might have seen it in something. I just can't see myself asking my parents, like, what is it made of? And they're like, cheese. So I don't know where that came from.
For me, it was definitely television. Because I remember like that rocket hitting the moon. And I think there might have been a song about it, too. If you believe we put a man on the moon.
Oh, look, we get a little serenade from Scott. Well, on that note, thank you so much, Scott, for doing that prep. This was very fascinating. And a brief reminder of our winner this week of my Avalon X Magnesium 8 Zinc Lozenges. Please send a screenshot of your review on Apple Podcasts to contact@mindblownshow.com, and we will send you a bottle of Avalon X Magnesium 8. And everybody else, you can write reviews. They help support the show so, so much, and that will enter you to win as well. And I think that's all the things. Anything from you, Scott, before we go?
Just also, if you like an episode or you have a couple of favorites, please share them with your friends. Help us grow the podcast. We want to really start doing some graphics and some video to help grow the podcast and help increase our content. So the more listeners we have, the more we can give you guys even better episodes. So please share your favorite episodes.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much, Scott, and I will talk to you next week.
All right, Mel. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Mind Blown podcast. Don't worry, your brain can store about 1 million gigabytes of data. That's enough memory to record continuous TV shows for over 300 years. That said, psychology suggests that your memory is actually just your memory of your last memory, leading to a process called memory distortion, where your memories change over time. If you're enjoying the show, remember to subscribe and write a brief review in Apple Podcasts, and definitely let us know what you find most mind-blowing.